You're listening to the Out Loud Bible Project podcast with Mike Dominey. Out Loud Bible Project is on a mission to read the entire Bible out loud in a conversational and approachable way, so you can recognize your part in this conversation between you and God.
Hey, welcome back to the Out Loud Bible Project podcast. Mike here. We're reading the Bible like a conversation so that you can find your next best yes in your relationship with God. Yes, we can even read some of these obscure, long, difficult books of the Bible in the Old Testament to find some takeaways, to find what the heart of God is. That's really the goal of reading the Old Testament overall. I mean, there's a lot of great things to mine out of it. There's a lot of great applications, a lot of great examples. And Old Testament is a lot of fun. A lot of, if you love stories and metaphors, I don't mean story in the sense that it didn't happen, but we have these narratives that serve as examples. But overall, we should read the Old Testament and try to determine what is the heart of God, because whatever was going on in his heart thousands of years ago, his heart is still the same. We still see the heart of God. And even last episode, we talked about the difference between God's hand and God's heart. And God's hand is used throughout the Old Testament as it's kind of the source of his judgment, of his discipline. This came from God's hand, and his hand is there to bring discipline and to strike down, and it's the instrument of his wrath. But God is not a God of wrath. He's a holy God. And in the face of unholiness, blatant rebellion and disrespect, then yes, wrath does come to purge evil from his presence. But the heart of God, that's the heart of God. His hand is the one giving the discipline, but his heart is one of peace, of mercy, of patience, of blessing. And if our hearts are like his, then we don't have to experience his hand. God's a holy God. I hope that's something that we've learned from reading these wilderness books here, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. He's a loving God, a God of peace, a God of blessing, a God who wants the best for his people. He knows what's best, but you know what also is part of what's best for his people is an utter rejection of the evil and the false gods and the idolatry around them among the other people. And part of the holy blessing of God also is the utter rejection of everything that is not of his heart. And it needs to be a violent sacrifice. It needs to be a violent rejection sometimes to show the severity of it. Often we see how God's talking and giving his laws and giving his discipline and demonstrating this is the consequence of this sin. And it's so that you may fear him, he says, that you may fear Yahweh your God. Because without a fear of God, then we're going to end up in some pretty dark places. We can love God. We can love God. You may never lose your love of God, but you may lose your fear of God. And that's the problem. And that's where the problems begin. At this point in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 22 is where we're going to be picking up today, we see Moses start to recount all of the laws and get very specific. And honestly, a lot of this is basically copy and paste from what we read in Leviticus. A lot of the same things about how life works best. And so I'm actually not going to read word for word everything that we have here in the chapters to come. But let's remember this. All of these laws here are trying to accomplish a few things. First of all, it's to help them look different. Help God's people look different from the people around them in their health. These laws, some of them are related to their health. This is just going to make a healthier culture that takes very seriously the very real threats of disease and mold and mildew and death and decay in a way that other cultures didn't really prioritize. It's also to get them to look morally different so that other cultures could look and see that, wow, this people of Israel, this Yahweh's people, seem to get along well, and they seem to have peace, and they seem to just have joy in the way they go about their life because of these laws and the ways that they relate to each other. If they follow these laws, the society should just be objectively happier, healthier, more peaceful, and that should get people's attention. And that can be true today. We as Christians, people should know we're Christians by our love, and the way we act should be different. That should get people's attention. Not that we use it as a way to like show that we're better than anyone, but to show, yeah, God made a difference in my life and he can make a difference in yours. And the other thing that these laws are trying to accomplish here is to show, frankly, how utterly unobeyable they all are. It should be overwhelming. It feels overwhelming to read all of these, and it must have been overwhelming for them to feel like, what, we have to follow all of these? This is a lot. The Levites, I'm sure, had a full-time job memorizing and learning and studying and knowing all of these laws and procedures and how to go about this. And all of this, frankly, is to show them, you know what, you can't do this. You can't do enough to be right with God. You can't just follow a list and be right in God's eyes. It's impossible. Only that can be done through Jesus. Now, Jesus wasn't sent yet, and so this was just to keep them safe and keep them close to the heart of God. In the meantime, to point them to the need of a Savior, where they've been making sacrifices and atonements their whole life for generations, one sacrifice was going to come and atone for all of the sins, so that all of these laws weren't going to be necessary anymore, and we could just enter into our relationship and enter the holy place that was once reserved for only the highest priest. Now all people can approach God and go to the place where he dwells. That's only through Jesus Christ. That's the whole point of this. And so today I'm just going to kind of give some skimming here and kind of point our attention to some of the highlights here in these chapters of Deuteronomy. Starting in chapter 22, we see some miscellaneous laws, frankly, and there's no other category but miscellaneous laws. Like, don't plow with an ox and a donkey yoked together. Don't wear clothes of wool and linen woven together. Laws like this that ultimately are a heart check of like, are we taking shortcuts? Are we doing things halfway? Are we just doing what's easiest? Are we doing what's right? Are we doing what's best for people, and are we being the best stewards of the resources and the tools and the people and the animals that we have? God's setting a lot of these miscellaneous laws in order just to keep order and to keep people's hearts in check. The chapter goes on to talk about marriage violations and the inevitable marriage issues when it comes to giving wives to be wed, and what happens when a man takes a wife and there's some sort of unfaithfulness between the two, and how do we figure out who is right and who is wrong. God's bringing order into this marriage because he loves marriage and he wants women to be respected, and a lot of these laws are actually preserving the dignity and the respect of women more so than even the culture would naturally be predisposed to do, and certainly the cultures around them. God is establishing respect and honor among women so that they don't get discarded as their culture is going to be inclined to do. Chapter 23 of Deuteronomy excludes multiple people from the assembly. There should be no one who is unclean. There should be no forbidden foreign marriages. There are certain groups of people that should not enter the assembly of the Lord. Don't despise them, but don't welcome them into the inner sanctum, the inner court, the assembly of God. God is really trying to make sure that his place where he is to be worshiped and honored is done so among people who have the cultural understanding and the respect that that deserves. Furthermore, God lays out some rules about uncleanness in the camp. And we talked about this in Leviticus, talking about uncleanness at that point, where it's not necessarily even a sin. It's just because we are humans, we find ourselves unclean sometimes as we go about life or as things happen to us that are not our fault. It's not a sin issue, but just we end up unclean. And unclean does not mean sinful, but it is a reminder that, you know what? God is holy and pure, and we are not. Even if we don't sin, we are still not pure and not holy. And that doesn't mean that we can't approach God. Certainly nowadays, God invites you to come to him just as you are. But in this culture, for these people at this time, it was also a matter of procedure just to say, hey, you know, in these situations, why don't you separate yourself from the community, from other people, from the assembly of God for a while, just so that we can keep a healthy culture and so that you can be reminded of, yeah, God is so holy, even on my best day, I don't deserve to be in his presence. Of course, we're super thankful that God allows us to enter his presence today, and we don't have to be so concerned about these things as his people were back in the day. Chapter 24 has some more laws that are here to encourage people to not take advantage of each other, whether it's marriage, whether it is neighbors, whether it is foreigners, whether it's captives, whatever the situation may be, don't take advantage of each other. When you loan things, don't go and try to use this as leverage for more power and to take advantage of people. Don't take advantage of hired workers. Don't deprive the foreigners or the fatherless of justice. These sort of situations where we see God's heart for the underdog, for the poor, the disenfranchised, the widows, the foreigners, those who just don't have as much. We still see God's heart. This is not to exclude them from his people. This is to not separate his people from other people. This is say, hey, just let's show respect to each other. Let's not let things get in the way of each other and get in the way of their encountering God. Chapter 25 has some more laws along these same lines. Being honest, again, not taking advantage of people. Don't have differing weights in your bag. Weights and measures is a big topic regarding fair transactions. People would try to get a little bit more out of people by using their own weights and measures when they were measuring out, yeah, I'll give you a pound of this, or I'll take a pound of that. Of course, they didn't use pounds, but whatever their weights were, is just, hey, remember that you were slaves, okay? Remember where you came from, and remember what God did. So now let's not go on a power trip now that you have freedom. Let's treat each other with respect the way God sees them. This is the overwhelming message here of a lot of these laws in these chapters. And it's important for us to remember as well. Like, hey, remember where you came from. You were dead to your sin, Paul talks about in the New Testament. And so let's not take this as an opportunity to lord our being chosen by God over others who have not recognized that yet. Let's not do that. Let's treat people in such a way that they have to be confronted with their own sin, not compared to us, but compared to God, and so that they want to get right with God because they see the results of that in our own life. Chapter 26, Moses remembers the laws about first fruits and tithes, and we see God's heart of wanting the best from us. Up to this point, he's shown, I want the best for you. This is the best for you. And now he's saying, I want the best from you. I don't want your leftovers. I want your first fruits, the first of your crop, the first of your income. I want that because only because of me is any of this possible. All of what you have is because I've let you have it. Can you show me that you trust me and that you honor me and that you thank me by giving the first of what you gather and the best? Moses even instructs people here in chapter 26, as they're giving their tithes and their offerings of their first fruits to the priest, the person who's bringing it should say, I know that my people have been in slavery in Egypt, and God heard us, and he saw our misery, and he brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and he did great and mighty things, and he brought us to this land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and now, from that land, I'm bringing the first fruits of what God has given me. That is the attitude with which we should be giving from what God gives us. Even nowadays, We should be able to say, wow, God has given me all that I have, my job, my income, my opportunities. And so I want to give him the first of this to show, God, I wouldn't have it if it weren't for you. And I want you to be able to take this as a sign of my thanks and as a sign of my trust that although I may think I need it, I'm going to trust that you can provide for me without it and that it's better off in your hands than it is mine. That's the heart of tithes and offerings and first fruits here in chapter 26. At the end, it says, the Lord your God commands you this day to follow these decrees and laws. Carefully observe them with all your heart and all your soul. You've declared this day that the Lord is your God and that you will walk in obedience to him, that you'll keep his decrees, commands, and laws, and that you'll listen to him. And the Lord has declared this day that you are his people, his treasured possession, as he promised, and that you're to keep all his commands. He's declared that he will set you in praise, fame, and honor high above all the nations he's made, and that you will be a people holy to the Lord your God, as he promised. That conclusion of chapter 26 reminds me of what Peter wrote in 1 Peter 2:9. And remember, we're not talking to and about the Old Testament Israelites. We're talking to Christians nowadays in the new covenant with Jesus. And Peter says in 1 Peter 2:9, you're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Can't you see our story today reflects the story of God's people, Israel, being called out of darkness, out of slavery, out of sin, into his wonderful light, so that we, like the Israelites, can be set, as it says in verse 19 in Deuteronomy 26, set in praise, fame, and honor high above all of the nations he's made, so that we can be a people holy to the Lord, as he promised. You are his. You are his treasured possession, as he promised. And yeah, keep his commands. Follow the heart of God. Purge yourself of the sin. Take all your burdens and your sin to Jesus and put it on his cross. And then live in a way that others can see, wow, look what a difference God makes. Are you living as a person of God? Are you living as God's people? What do people see when they look at you? Do they see him? That's the Thinking Out Loud thought for today.
You've been listening to the Out Loud Bible Project podcast with Mike Domini. When you become a patron of Out Loud Bible Project, you help make the Bible accessible for people who desperately need to know they have a role in this conversation with God. To learn more, visit outloudbible.com and click Support This Project. Thanks for listening.